We appreciate the message this morning, and it was a blessing to me. You don't have to be Elijah to have your prayers answered. You have to just have to know who Elijah was praying to. It was 3 years ago. I was in Oregon, and my wife was pregnant for Benjamin, and it appeared that while I was out there, she was losing the baby, and we had lost one before, and it just seemed like she was losing this one. And she went to several doctor's appointments, and they both told her there's nothing there. There's nothing, just like the message this morning. And when I finally got home, it took me several days, not much had changed, and we had to make some decisions, some hard decisions, some decisions for procedures to keep my wife safe and keep her healthy, and didn't know what to do. I was scared, and we went to the last doctor's appointment before we had to make a decision. And like Elijah, with my head between my knees, I've just prayed, Lord, just send a cloud. That's all. That would be enough hope for me to say, stop the procedure, just stop. And I just prayed, Lord, just a cloud, just anything, some answer so we know what to do in this position. And I wasn't looking at the ultrasound screen at that moment. I was just had my eyes closed and my head in my lap and just praying, Lord, give us an answer. And just a cloud. I could just think of that story in my mind. And it was just then that the doctor said, wait a minute, I think I saw something there. Go back. And he ended up kind of taking control of the ultrasound from the tech. And he said, I think I saw something back there. And that was enough for me. After a few moments, what had been a black screen for the last three visits immediately just turned into a baby right before our eyes. And I left just feeling like not only could God do anything, but He would. And it was a tremendous moment for me. And I know it was a testimony to that doctor, as he was amazed. And we thank God for our son Benjamin and for all of our children. Each one is a miracle, and that time we just got to see it, and that was a blessing. And I wanted to share that with you because I'm not Elijah, but that doesn't matter. We serve Elijah's God, and was a blessing to me of all the nothings that we face. And I just wanted to testify of that before I preached. I wanted to share that was a blessing to me. If you have your Bibles, turn to Deuteronomy chapter number 1. Verse number 1. These be the words which Moses spake unto all Israel on this side Jordan in the wilderness, in the plain, over against the Red Sea, between Paran and Tophel, and Laban, and Hazeroth, and Dizahab. There are 11 days' journey from Horeb by the way of the Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. And it came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spake unto the children of Israel according to all that the Lord had given him in the commandment unto them, after he had slain Sihon, king of the Amorites, which dwelt in Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan, which dwelt at Ashtaroth in Edrei. On this side of the Jordan, these are his words, in the land of Moab began Moses to declare this law, saying, the Lord our God spake unto us in Horeb. So it's kind of confusing if you're not paying attention, but the first five verses were describing to us when Moses said this, and now Moses is beginning to speak, and he says, the Lord said unto us in Horeb. We're being directed, first of all, to the time in which Moses relayed these things, And then Moses is directing us to some words that God spoke unto them at another time frame when they were in Horeb, saying, "Ye have dwelt long enough in this mount." So I was reading this. I don't know what brought me to the book of Deuteronomy in this passage, but it really caught my attention, this what God said to Israel here at this time when they were in Horeb. He said, "You've dwelt long enough in this mount. You've been in this place. You've been in this condition. You've been in this spot long enough." This is the area of Sinai that they were at. To me, in my mind, I always try to think of Israel's journey as representing our spiritual journey, and I try to learn from it. I'm always trying to learn how to serve the Lord better and how to not make mistakes and learn the hard way and just try to learn from Israel. And as I consider this spiritual journey and them being in the place of Sinai there when the Lord spoke these words, "You've dwelt long enough in this mount," I think of that as the place where they came, one of the first places they came after they left Egypt, after they were saved. After the Lord brought them out of Egypt and He delivered His law to them. And you know, those are glorious times in our lives when we're saved. It's glorious when the Lord begins to teach us and we begin to learn things and we begin to learn His will and we begin to learn His word. And that might be a mountain in our spiritual journey. It might be a high point, a high place in our life. And I picture the Lord speaking very tenderly here as He says, you've dwelt long enough in this mount. He's a very long-suffering God. He's a very merciful God. And He says here, you've been here in this place long enough. I'm sure that the Israelites would have liked to just found any place and tried to make it home. You know, try to nest and try to put down roots. We know that this has been a temptation of God's people for a long time. Back in Babel, they just wanted to settle somewhere. They just wanted to be somewhere. And at that time, it was not God's will. And at this time, it was not God's will. And He said, "You've dwelt long enough." Now, we're thinking now of our spiritual journey. Not so much of a physical journey. It may not necessarily be with you as it is with me and my wife. Part of our spiritual journey is moving, and that's just part of it. But for most of us, that it will be the opposite. We will not be moving geographically most of the time. The Lord places us in a church, and He sets us as part of a body, and for the most part, geographically speaking, we're not moving. Quite often, contrary to His will, in most cases, to be on the move. But we're thinking spiritually here, you've dwelt long enough in this mount. This morning, Brother Tim brought about a devotion about seasons of our lives. And we go through different periods and different times. There's times of plenty, and we talked about this morning, there were times of drought, and there's different times. And the Lord leads us so very gently along our way. And He's speaking here, you've dwelt long enough in this condition. I don't know what your condition is tonight, but it may very well change. It may very well be His will that it change. And He says to them, you've dwelt long enough in this mount, in this place. And He says in verse 7, take your journey. Take your journey. You know, the Lord doesn't save us and just take us right out. He didn't take Israel right out of Egypt and into the promised land. He doesn't just save us and take us out of this earth. There's a process. There are things that we're going through. There's things that we're doing, I believe, for our sakes. I believe that not only for the sake of others and discipleship, but for our sakes. And He said, take your journey. It's your journey. You can't take somebody else's journey. You know, we look around and we would like to. We would like to take somebody else's journey. We think that their journey is better. And He said, take your journey. You've got to. There's not really a choice in the matter. We serve a sovereign God, and we would like to do something different, but he speaks very tenderly here. You've dwelt long enough in this mount. Take your journey. Move along, Christian. Move along, Christian. You need to grow. You need to move along. Not necessarily geographically, but there are different phases and seasons of our life and growth. And notice where they went as they took their journey. And he says, and go to the mount of the Amorites. I'm very simple-minded. You'll have to apologize, but in my estimation, you can't go from mount to mount without going through a valley. It's just not going to happen. We would like to circumvent God's system. For some reason, we think we know better. We don't like the things that have come our way, and we kick and we fight, but we need to take our journey. There's a lot of people that live their lives bitter about their life, bitter about their circumstances, and bitter against God. They may not realize it, but they're bitter against God. And they refuse to accept the circumstance. They're going to try to change it. They're going to try to mold it. They're not happy with their husband. They're not happy with their wife. They're not happy with their job. They're not happy with anything. They're going to try to change it. And they won't accept it. Take your journey. Go to the mount of the Amorites. Notice the rest there. Unto all the places nigh thereunto. You're going to have to go through all the places that lead there. In the plain. And in the hills. In the vale. And in the south. And by the seaside. To the land of the Canaanites. And unto Lebanon. Unto the great river. The river Euphrates. See, the destination is wonderful. The destination is glorious. But there are some hills. There are some plains. There are some vales. There are some seas. There are some things between here and there. We don't like to accept that. We try to plan our lives so that we just leap from mountaintop to mountaintop, but it's just not the way it is. We're just living outside of reality sometimes, and maybe part of that's that we live in the United States of America and we believe that we can live outside of reality. But the truth of the matter is, between here and there are plains, hills, vales, all sorts of terrain. Take your journey. Verse 8, he said, behold, I have set the land before you. Go in and possess the land. Own the land. You know, I think about the land. Much of this journey seems to be about the land. There's a lot of land in our lives. There's land in our homes. Some land that we need to possess. That by faith we can possess in our homes. It's the land of our mind. And there's many lands that God would have us to possess by faith. We can't read all of these things, but let us go over to verse number 19. He said, and when we departed from Horeb, we're moving on now in the story. And when we departed from Horeb, notice these words here. We went through. We went through. Hold your place there and turn with me to the 23rd Psalm. 23rd Psalm's a tremendous blessing to me. All the songs we sang just previously just really went right along with all of these things. And we sang words from the 23rd Psalm before we began. 23rd Psalm, and there's just so many different neat things in the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh. He continually does that. I'm glad that he didn't say he made me. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. Continually. These are continual things that he does. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Now notice verse 4. All the while, these verbs seem to have the idea that he's continuing to do these things. And notice what he says here, yea, though I walk. It seems to me that by the verb here that perhaps he's writing this in the valley of the shadow of death. Yea, though I walk. Through. All of these other places were destinations. The valley of the shadow of death was not. Though I walk through. He leadeth me to still waters. He maketh me to lie down. But yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Beyond all the blessings of this life, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. But that word through, I wanted to point out. Though I walk through the valley. He didn't say I walk to the valley, but I walk through the valley. Now getting back to Deuteronomy 1 and verse 19. He said, and when we departed from Horeb, we went through. He's retelling the story. He's reminding Israel because they're now at the brink of the promised land again, and he's reminding them. He doesn't want them to make the same mistake. And he's reminding them, and when we departed Horeb, we went through all that great and terrible wilderness. And we're through it. Made it through. We went through that, which he saw by the way of the mountain of the Amorites, as the Lord our God commanded us. We went through. And after they did that, and they went through all of that, they got to the border of the promised land the first time in verse 26. He said, notwithstanding, ye would not go up, but rebelled against the commandment of the Lord your God. They had opportunity there to enter in. After they'd been through so much and learned so much, and yet most of them just weren't quite there yet. They hadn't gotten it. They hadn't learned to trust the Lord and hadn't learned to obey Him. They were afraid, verse 28, the people is greater and taller than we. The cities are great and walled up to heaven. Then I said unto you, dread not, neither be afraid of them. And so, verse 45, they wouldn't go into the promised land the first time. We know the story. And ye returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord would not hearken to your voice, nor give ear unto you. So ye abode in Kadesh many days. Here they are in another place. This is a place of sulking, a place of despair, a place of regret. And they stood in that place many days. Chapter 2 begins. He's continuing to tell the story of the history of Israel. Then we returned and took our journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea, as the Lord spake unto me. And we can pass Mount Seir many days. That's that general area near Kadesh Barnea there. And the Lord spake unto me, saying, ye have compassed this mountain long enough. You've been in this place long enough. Turn you northward. You've been sulking long enough. You've been living in regret and bitterness long enough. Now head north. They had a few more things to learn, and they were still going along on this journey. We will skip down now to verse number 9. As they left Mount Seir, as they left that area, they came near Moab in verse 9, and the Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee of their land for a possession. For I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession. The Emans dwelt therein in times past, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims, which were also accounted giants as the Anakims, but the Moabites called them Emims. The same problem, the same difficulty. But the children of Lot prevailed. The same type of situation. God in his mercy had given them a land, and they succeeded. Part of their journey here, the second time around, the second journey, is he's going to show them some nations. Some nations that had succeeded. Some nations whom God had been merciful to in their journeys and made it to their destination. So he shows them that he'd given Ar to the Moabites. And they travel on here. Notice down in verse 19. He said, "And when thou comest nigh against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them, for I will not give thee of the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because I have given it unto the children of Lot for a possession. That was also counted a land of giants. Giants dwelt therein in old time, and the Ammonites call them Zamzumims, a great people and many, tall as the Anakims. But the Lord destroyed them all before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead." Take your journey. Take your journey. Others less mighty than you have succeeded. Others, by the grace of God and by his tender mercy, have succeeded. Take your journey. Walk through. Go. You know, I can't help as I see all these examples of other people other than the children of Israel, of that verse in I think it's Luke chapter 16, where he says the children of this world are wiser in their generations than the children of light. Many have walked through and succeeded in this world. He goes on, he shows them another group in verse 22. "As he did to the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir, when he destroyed the Horims before them, and they succeeded them, and dwelt in their stead even unto this day." So what's the deal? He's taking them along this way, and he's showing them all of these that have received habitations, have possessed the land, who are fewer and smaller than Israel. But that's not it. There's more. He said in verse 23, "And the Avims which dwelt in Hazarim, even unto Aza, the Kaphtorims which came out of Kaphtor destroyed them and dwelt in their stead." These four groups, God gave them an eternal possession in those places. He gave them a possession in this earth. They conquered. They were victorious. They took their journeys. They were obedient to the Lord, and they made it. And they were smaller and less than the apple of God's eye, Israel. He says in verse 24, "Rise ye up." Once again, he encourages them, "Rise ye up. Take your journey. Pass over the river Arnon. Rise up." And then he gives them a little victory over Sihon and Og here to show them that they're able. He takes them along this journey, and he takes them through wildernesses and difficulties and trials, teaching them about his faithfulness, teaching them about his power. Take your journey. Last Sunday night, I believe it was, that we were reading in the book of Luke here about the disciples. And he posed the question to them. He said, "Why are you so fearful? Why? What?" And that rings in my head. Why are you so fearful? Rise up. Take your journey. Pass over. Notice verse 25. "This day will I begin to put the dread of thee and the fear of thee upon the nations." This day. It's interesting. We're told what day that he spoke these things on. And through the book of Deuteronomy, Moses says that phrase, "this day," 70 times. Today. Today, there's some things you need to do. Today, this day. He says in chapter 5, "This day, I set before you a blessing and a curse. A blessing if you obey, a curse if you don't. This day." Many times we're tomorrow's best Christian, aren't we? We're tomorrow's best follower. I know I am. There's all kinds of things. We're tomorrow's best father. We're tomorrow's best worker. We're tomorrow's best church servant. Tomorrow, this day, today, he says, "Rise up, take your journey. Oh, we fight. We just, some things we don't want to surrender to. We don't want to be obedient. Whatever the day brings, rise up. Take your journey. Whether it be sickness, we read this morning, turn there in Ecclesiastes. Goes very well with these things. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 1. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, and a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh. We have to take our journey through these things. Submit to the Lord. Be determined not to be angry at the things that He chooses. To take our journey. Job is a tremendous example of someone who took his journey. I can just hear the gentle voice of the Lord. Job was on a mountain. He was on quite a high mountain. And things changed in his life. You've dwelt long enough in this mountain. He passed through a great valley. And he received it. He said, shall we receive good and not evil, not bad from the hand of the Lord? He took his journey. His wife didn't. I mean, his wife said, just curse God and die. I mean, I don't discredit her. She was quite a woman herself. Went through a lot. But he received his journey. He could have, like many, cursed God. That's what many do today. They curse God. They're not willing to receive it. They're not willing to receive sickness. They're not willing to receive poverty. You know, if it's the Lord's will, I'm not saying you need to be lazy, but there's not much you can do about it. I mean, the way you are, the condition that God has placed in your life, I'm not saying we're to be negligent, because there are those that are negligent about their lives, and there's much in the Bible to speak of that. But at some place, at some time, you're going to have to surrender. There's just no way around it. You're going to have to get over it. You're going to have to rise up. You're going to have to stand up and take the journey. There are difficulties. There are mountains, but there are also hills and valleys and plains. And there are days that are not so good. And a few weeks ago, it stuck out to me as it was read in the message that there are times of walking and there are times of running. He said, when thou walkest, you won't fall, paraphrasing it. And when you run, you won't stumble. There'll be days of both of those. There'll be hills, there'll be valleys, there'll be plains. Some of us would just like to dwell in the plain forever. We don't like change. There are going to be different phases of life, different hurdles and hills. We fight and we kick against them, but there's not much we can do but to receive them, to rejoice in the Lord and follow Him. You know, we ruin perfectly good days. I'm really good at that. I ruin perfectly good days with dread and fear, fretting and worrying. Perfectly wonderful days with my children that I don't enjoy them because I'm fretting about tomorrow, fretting about something else. Take your journey. Trust in the Lord. Israel had a hard time learning to trust the Lord. They needed to see some things. And much of that journey is about seeing some things. There's some things we need to see and learn. And I know that there's many things I need to see and learn. Many things along the way. Many victories that the Lord will show me. Many what seem like near destructions that He delivers us from, that we learn from. We're strengthened. Our faith is encouraged. And we're brought to new heights and new places spiritually. But I encourage you to rise up and take your journey. If we believe we serve a sovereign God, simply no choice. You can either be happy about it. I mean, that's what my dad always said to me, son, you're going to do this. You can either be happy about it or not. You know, you're going to go to this function and you're going to have a good time, he used to say to me. And that's the way it was. There's not a choice in the matter. We seem to think that there's a choice in the matter. That's why children argue. They argue because they seem to think there's a choice. They fight with you because they've gotten the impression that they're going to get somewhere. But God reminds Israel in Psalms chapter 50 that he's simply not like us. We're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to change things. We just need to submit to it. And the sooner we can submit and learn from it, maybe the sooner it'll be over in many conditions. We just submit to it, take our journey, and follow the Lord. It's very hard to do sometimes. But when we realize that he is a sovereign God and he has it under control, we're trying to play God so many times, arranging our lives, and it's very easy to get into that pattern of trying to shape and mold and try to live on the mountain all the time, but it's just simply not the Lord's will.